There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast
on the left.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
Man, I was trying to work out some bit about being, if I was smoking weed, I'm like doing a bunch of like magical workings and stuff, right? You'd call me the Brolarian, right? But that's not a thing, right? That's not comedy.
That assumes a lot of knowledge about Jack Parsons' magical aliases.
But what's kind of fun about that is that then in and of itself a lesson of the mystery schools? Because what I've done is said, yes, some people would say hacky dumb joke, mm-hmm. perchance from some Seth Rogen ritual magic comedy from 2006,
ooh.
Right? But again, this is a time machine when we could have been like very famous.
Yeah. Mahalo.
Like, very, very good, right? but instead, what it is, it's kind of half funny,
yeah.
right? But you're going to just shoehorn Mahalo in today.
Yeah.
But again, maybe that's an allegorical thing here. If we do some numerology on Mahalo, how does it break out, right? Because Mahalo is spelled M as in Mary, A as in asshole, H, right?
Uh-huh.
As
Mahalo.
In hurricane, hurricano, right? And then I think it's...
Mahalo, another A.
O?
A, and no, it's, I think it's Mahalo.
Brolarian. Brolarian, though, still at the same time, you have to unpack it. Because then you see the term Brolarian, you're like, oh, wow, that's funny. What a funny weed joke. That guy must be fucking amazing in bed.
Mm-hmm. Yes, right? Indeed.
But then they pick it apart and they realize it's a whole like reference mm-hmm. to a bunch of books that they should have fucking read if they wanted to be anybody that it mattered.
All right. Brolarian sounds like a guy not allowed near schools. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Last Podcast on the Left. I am Ben, hanging out with Henry and hanging out with Marcus.
Yeah.
Mahalo, everybody.
You're just saying it. You're just saying Mahalo a bunch because you drank a bunch of red wine last night, and that has become the weird your hangover talisman.
Just walked into the studio today and just kept going, Mahalo.
It's like, it's not a thing.
Well, anyway, what is a thing is this episode?
Wow.
We are on to Jack Parsons, part 4. It is the final, and it's the conclusion.
It's the conclusion.
If a conclusion even can be made, because it seems that Jack Parsons' end actually brought a lot more questions than answers.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's get into it.
So when we last left Jack Parsons, L. Ron Hubbard had just swindled him out of his life savings, literally sailing away with not only the majority of Jack's fortune, but Jack's main squeeze, Sarah, to boot.
And guess what? He didn't even like Sarah.
Wow.
By the time it all rolled around, he was so sad that he had married Sarah, and mm-hmm. he was so upset with the whole situation. That's when he wrote the affirmations. Yeah, because he was super, like, bummed out.
Now, what were the affirmations again?
It was like, I am an attractive man.
Yeah.
It was where L. Ron showed...
fucking Stuart Smalley?
It's exactly like Stuart Smalley. It's like, the mole on your face is not as noticeable as you believe it is.
I am a compelling writer. Like, he says these things. But it's really interesting because, in a way... We'll get into it, but Jack Parsons' journals, they were way more honest and open. But what L. Ron was doing was creating the legend from the inside out by lying to the source, which is yourself.
Isn't it ironic? Al Franken should have listened to Stuart Smalley a little bit before he got perp walked out of the Senate.
Yeah.
She doesn't. I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and gosh darn it, I'll grope anyone I fucking want.
This is great. Thank you, Kissel.
Perfect.
Mahalo.
That doesn't fix it.
Now, while losing Sarah to L. Ron was certainly no easy thing for Parsons to deal with, the blow was softened because he still had his so-called elemental, Marjorie Cameron, who, if you'll remember, was the woman who'd helped him through the second part of the Babylon working.
And who had helped him through the first part of the Babylon working without her knowing.
Yes.
Okay.
But since Parsons had sold the mansion where the OTO Agape Lodge had effectively set up their headquarters, he moved out of Pasadena and got a job at North American Aviation after L. Ron Hubbard was through with him.
See ya, fucker.
Okay.
I love that he made a call because I did read a little bit between the lines. I forgot that Parsons had called LRH when he'd ran off. And he was like, okay, I'm like, hey, LRH, I'm having this feeling that you might have taken all my money. Right. And he's just like, no. The thing was just that we just can't. All right. Because originally they were supposed to truck the boats.
Mm-hmm.
He's just like, but he got there. He's like, we don't want to truck these boats.
Yeah.
We gotta, they're boats. We gotta sail these boats.
I'm with Ron on that
he
one.
He is, but that was the promise. And that's why he's like, that's why it's taking so much longer. But then it turns out he just bought the one boat and then they just spent all the money fucking and drinking on the boat.
One boat, two schooners. Mm-hmm. Technically three boats, not three yachts.
Not
the deal.
Not the deal.
Living in Manhattan Beach in the greater Los Angeles area, Parsons worked on the government-funded Navajo missile program by day, once again a workaday man. But by night, Jack Parsons and Marjorie Cameron lived the lives of bohemian magicians.
It's kind of cool. He couldn't, like, not end up in the coolest group possible. Mm-hmm. Like, he went from magicians, which, I mean, he obviously we argued last episode, are they the coolest group possible? I don't know. They definitely ate a lot of cum, which I love about them. Love them.
Yeah.
But then they found themselves into the jazz scene.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's all the jazz.
I love jazz. We're making jazz here.
Sorta.
I'm bebopping and scatting. How about you?
That's all jazzes.
That's about the words you don't say.
What's her name? Billie Elliot? Billie Holiday. That's all she did was...
She was immensely talented.
It's not even close. It's not even close to what she did.
She's a beautiful voice. One of the most iconic voices in American history.
It's a bad scat.
Billie Elliot was a child dancer.
Oh, yeah.
While Parsons delved into tarot and astrology, Marjorie created fantastic paintings. They're haunting.
Yeah.
Sometimes she would portray famous magicians of yore, like John Dee. Sometimes she would paint pictures of Jack's ex, Sarah, bleeding out with her legs cut off.
Huh.
Just to make Jack feel better.
Is that nice?
Oh, that is nice.
When he was crying, he showed up with pictures of her, of his, like, tortured ex, and he was like, Marjorie, baby, you know what I like.
That's their love language.
Yeah, yeah, it is. But while Cameron was certainly a practitioner, she didn't see magic as a practical everyday thing like Parsons did. In one example, Sarah said that a windstorm swept through the house. But while she was focused on closing the windows, Parsons went upstairs to find his magical dagger to stop the wind.
It's very difficult. It's very, very difficult. Because again, he was chasing after results and synchronicities.
Always.
Okay.
Now, Parsons was head over heels for Cameron, both emotionally and physically. Parsons, it could be said, was a man who loved big and fucked bigger.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Wow, like Crumb.
Yeah.
Mm.
The letter. Mm.
Yeah.
Like R. Crumb.
Well, yes. He means physically larger, but yes.
Yeah. And big lady love.
It was a fetish.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's not a fetish. It's called common sense. I love the idea. Honestly, like some of those pictures he drew, I was just like, I could put myself right in there.
Yeah.
Like, you know, riding a woman on the saddle on her and stuff. Really big, tall woman. Is that weird?
His brother was a pedophile.
Well, we know that. Rar Crumb liked him extra big. That's how you know he wasn't a pedophile.
Absolutely.
Can't get Rar Crumb out of my head now.
Yeah, I know.
Well, Parsons, as far as his physical love, that's more evident in the poetry that Parsons wrote for Marjorie Cameron. Here's an example.
Can we play some of that Thelema jazz?
The Thelema jazz?
Over this?
Sure.
You can do it in post. We don't have to do it like this. But let's set the mood a little bit.
Yeah. Ooh. All right. I'm going to take my pants off. Sweet.
Now, I'm a whip coiling across your naked buttocks. Your flesh writhes under my caress, and your voice is shrill with pain and passion.
This is you sensual?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yum. I am a flame. It crawls slowly about you. Ooh. I found the soles of your feet and seek each nerve center.
Oh, nothing says romance like nerve centers.
You know, honestly, he's a scientist. He's a scientist first.
Okay. Yeah.
But at the same time, Marjorie and Jack had agreed to an open marriage before they'd said their vows.
You know, what it normally means is that the woman seems to get a lot more action.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was certainly the case here.
Right.
Marjorie was decidedly less emotive and less affectionate than Jack. And while this tended to drive them apart as lovers, it seemed to actually strengthen their bond as magical partners.
Well, as we see, what we learn from truly the... It's a classical magician combo.
Yeah.
LRH and Jack Parsons, he realized it too afterwards in his journals. Jack Parsons realized that he didn't realize he had created the exact relationship that John Dee and Edward Kelly had, right?
Yeah.
That it was the same group. But now Marjorie, there's something about opposites kind of coming together that it's again and again in every piece of alchemical writing I look at, that's always the magic source, is that you got fire and stone, wind and water, you put them together and it
right.
works.
Yeah, Paul Abdul had sex with a cartoon cat.
I mean, and I don't think that should have been allowed.
No.
Have you seen the unrated one?
Oh, it's pretty hot.
It's pretty crazy. She puts two in all of her fucking asshole. Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. Mahalo.
Yeah, sure.
Well, for Jack's part, he started sharing more intimate details about the Babylon working with Marjorie, telling her that she might one day be in charge of the working in the event of his demise.
One day, when it comes down to you women, you figure out how to wear some pants, huh? It's a little bit harder than your little skirts, right? Because you got to figure out how to get your feet through the tiny holes.
Absolutely. That reminds me of when my father looked at his truck and he said, Ben, one day all this will be yours.
And he meant it wasn't just Bud Light.
Yeah, it was.
Well, Jack told her that Babylon was the great work that linked them together, although he did warn her that if the magic was misused, the results could be disastrous. Interestingly, Jack also told her that he would be, quote unquote, blown away on the day of Marjorie's manifestation. And while we don't know exactly what Marjorie Cameron was doing all day on the date of Jack's death, blown away is certainly an interesting choice of words.
Okay.
Now, in a further bid to support Marjorie's magical education, Jack began planning a trip for the two of them to travel to England to meet with Aleister Crowley himself.
Oh, and what a fun day that was going to be watching him die.
Lady's dream.
Yeah, everyone loves going to England, going all the way to England on a steamer ship to hang out with a heroin addict.
Oh, yeah. Cover his own shit.
Nice.
And in the process, Jack hoped to use Marjorie's charm to convince Crowley to forgive Jack for his past weaknesses concerning L. Ron Hubbard. Because he'd, of course, lost all of Crowley's respect by getting swindled by the ruddy-faced Navy man.
Well, you know, victim here. You can't victim blame.
Well, the thing is, in Thelema, and the whole, you have let this happen to you. Yeah. You are a man of pure agency. He is a man of action. And anybody that should be in charge of a lodge would be able to see his way around these things, according to Crowley. Crowley, how you know it got bad is that he was like, he used to remind me of me, but now he reminds me of certain Victor Neuberg.
No.
So basically, the guy that he let bottom him out, that he still thinks, but he's just like, because again, he was the, you know, the power bottom of them all time.
Of course.
Right? Like, he was like, Jack Parsons is that guy, the guy that he destroyed with his butt.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
But just after Parsons sent Crowley a letter stating his intentions to visit, while, of course, also making a case for his own magical growth,
yes,
Aleister Crowley died at the age of 72. Famously, his last words were either,
I am perplexed!
Or my favorite,
sometimes I hate myself. I can see it, man. Myself, just looking at dying, looking in a mirror, be like, sometimes I fucking hate myself.
That's a sign of a good life.
Yeah.
And so Jack and Marjorie stayed in the United States, where Jack was about to be swept up in the Red Scare of the 1940s.
He was kind of ripe for it.
Yeah. See, by this time, the Soviet Union had, of course, become America's big bad guy after World War II. And you may not be surprised to find out that Parsons ran in one or two communist circles in his time as a groovy dude about town.
Well, it used to be kind of normal. We talked about this yesterday, about how, like, your family, like, was in Oklahoma.
My ancestors in Oklahoma, they were all commies.
Yeah, and they refused to leave the Dust Bowl because they're like, we will organize this dirt. We will bring this dirt. It will gain its power.
We will organize how to all die of dust pneumonia before the bank takes our house.
That's fantastic.
It's communal living.
But it used to be way more not. Like, there used to be kind of like, wasn't there like legit communist like presidential candidates and shit in the 1800s?
Eugene
and stuff?
V. Debs, wasn't
Something
he
like
the?
That.
Yeah, he was the big communist back in the day.
He didn't do well.
But still, it used to be more open, and then now we're obviously with it, things had changed.
Yeah, let's get into it. I always say, get political.
You did up top.
Now, Parsons wasn't a communist at all. Quite the opposite. He was a Dr. Demento-level libertarian.
Hey, is a parody song dangerous or good?
It's neutral.
Two-edged sword.
It knows no religion. It knows no country.
That's the thing, man. It's free, dude. It doesn't get taxed.
God, I love fucking Dr. Demento. It does.
Well, because, again, I'll never forget that clip I saw of Dr. Demento at the Libertarian Conference playing his own parody song from a recorder. Like, he didn't put it in the PA. He put a recording device up to the microphone and played it. And it's been like, I ain't got No taxes. Like, he was just,
they are a special bunch.
Yeah. Wow. It takes up like freedom and just make it so fucking stupid.
Well, Jack Parsons, he wasn't a communist, but some members of the Suicide Squad were communists, or they had communist ties. And additionally, the United States government was quickly discovering that a lot of scientists who'd heavily contributed to the war effort, guys like fucking Robert Oppenheimer, creator of the atomic bomb, they were either communists or were at least communist adjacent. Now, Parsons had been the subject of an FBI...
No, wait, is that true?
Yeah.
Like, is that true? Because I know that there was, like... Because I know what we found from a lot of these guys, that they were all on fringe. They were all, like, kind of fringe thinkers within that group. And I feel like a lot of their politics also kind of changed once you made a bunch of weapons for mass destruction.
Right.
Well, Oppenheimer, I'm not quite sure about his communist affiliation, but, like, his brother was a communist, like a card-carrying communist. He'd gone to a lot of communist meetings.
Man.
I mean, but that's the thing, is that these guys were just sort of free thinkers, open thinkers. That's why you had a lot of people here in Hollywood that got caught up in the Red Scare, because they're curious people.
And again, we're actors, all right? We just like showing up.
It was mostly writers, actually. Actors. Yeah. Those curious intellectual giants that are actors.
It's not that they're intellectuals, but they like going places and wearing costumes and badges. It's why Scientology applies, too, because I think that's a part of it. Being like, ooh, we get to go to a little house and all talk about voting, or like, ooh. They're like, oh, this is fun, you know, and they're in a circle. They don't understand.
Actors are fun because they say stuff like mahalo.
You say stuff like mahalo. And so does most of Hawaii.
Yes, indeed.
Now, Parsons had been the subject of an FBI investigation ever since he'd started working on the Navajo missile program. And after very little digging, the Bureau discovered a whole bunch of police reports from busybodies who thought that it was worth calling 911 over magical rituals and odd behavior.
Whatever.
The Bureau, I believe you mean the deep state.
Yeah. Well, honestly?
Ben? Of course, someone flat out said that Parsons was a communist. They just said it.
Oh, sure.
Sure.
And the rumors of voodoo, cults, and homosexuality at the Parsonage didn't help in 1947 America, especially after an unknown source talked to the FBI and described Jack's mansion as, quote, a gathering place for perverts.
Cool.
Nice.
It's kind of like, I want to go there.
Sounds like an Arby's.
Yeah. In this economy, that means nothing.
No, it really doesn't.
But it's interesting because he put that list out, right? When he did the thing where he's like, I want only atheists to like live here. I feel like there's also those things they attach to it. Cause didn't they also believe that the idea that communism was some gigantic atheist movement that was going to destroy the beloved Christian bedrock of America, some garbage?
Oh, worshiping the state, not God.
Mm-hmm.
So Parsons was immediately listed as a, quote, undesirable employee for National Defense Work. And he was suspended from his job pending further investigation.
With pay?
No.
No.
Dang it.
No. From there, life truly began falling apart for Jack Parsons. After Jack lost his job, Marjorie decided that even though she and Jack were doing magic and she was painting, they're having a good time, she still felt, and this is how author George Pendle put it, she still felt like a scientist's wife. Living in Manhattan Beach.
Okay, she wanted herself. She wanted to be known as Cameron.
Yeah.
Herself.
And so she left Jack to join an artist colony in San Miguel de Allende in Mexico.
Well, she just joined more people that are going to dilute her personality.
No. She's choosing this group. Yeah. The last group she sort of was fucked into, like literally. So now this one, she's choosing
a
new group.
She fucked herself into that group.
Yeah, sure.
She had agency to fuck. She chose to fuck herself into that group.
She's going to go fuck herself into a new group.
Yeah.
Okay.
With Marjorie gone and defense work not an option, Jack Parsons, the founder of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory and sometime master of the magical arts, he got a job pumping gas on the weekends.
No kidding, in New Jersey.
I love that guy. I love that guy and the fact that he was, because Jack Parsons famously was like, it's just a job.
Yeah,
like he was not concerned about like the quote unquote drop in status. He was really just like, I gotta pay my bills and I'm gonna pump gas.
Well,
and you don't think I don't fuck? Yeah. That's what every day he's pumping gas. You don't think I don't fuck?
Well, it's for me, it's not about a lack of status, it's about a lack of respect.
Sure.
You know, like this guy is a genius.
He's a genius.
Brilliant. You know, he's founded, he founded the company that took us to Mars, for fuck's sake.
But this was the time where the gas pump operator really had wise words for everyone. one.
He'd come by to be like, "Oh, it was low.
Yeah.
I see that there's a dog that's dead. It's attached to your bumper."
Yeah. I don't know why you kids want to go messing around in an old house like that.
Yeah, you don't want to go down that. I don't want to go down that road. He's a gas bumper. Yeah.
Absolutely. That was when it was different. People were more mythical, I think, back then. Wise, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps.
Yes.
And it was the, he lived across the, guy said, don't go down that road.
Yeah.
He lived across the street. That was Fred Gwynn.
Yes, Fred Gwynn. But yeah, he was a neighbor, but still, you'd imagine him.
As at the gas station, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Jack Parr, okay, so he pumped gas on the weekends, spent the rest of the time working as a mechanic or as a hospital assistant, just kind of making a cash here and there. Okay. Briefly and bizarrely, he even had a staff position at the Department of Pharmacology at USC, and it's speculated that he got that job because he was really good at making narcotics at home.
You know, dude lived the libertarian dream. He had two separate high-level jobs that he did not have to go to school for at all. They were all just from his backyard.
Yeah.
Of all of the people that were, like, quote-unquote, like, self-made, he really is one. Like, he learned it all just from fucking around with gunk in his backyard.
What kind of narcotics?
And making his own drugs. Yeah.
Right. What kind of narcotics are we talking here? Like cocaine?
I mean, that's what I really want to know. Like, I really want to know. Like, Jack Parsons hands you a pill and says, take this. You take it. What's going to happen?
I don't know. I feel like he probably made his own psychedelics. Yeah. I think he probably did a lot of stuff. I was actually reading
His own speed quite a bit.
A lot. There was a book that's called this gigantic book about this one guy. Oh, God damn it. Where is this thing? So many tabs. I have so many tabs.
I just looked. There's at least 40 tabs open.
So many tabs. But it was this guy who made 72 of his own different hallucinogens and tried it on himself. And each time he did one, here it is. It's called Pikal, A Chemical Love Story by Alexander Shulgin. And basically he had this, it's 1 to 4 stars. 1 star is like, you get high on it. You can still do stuff though. And then level 4 is you lose your personality. Like you become the curtains.
Ego death.
Yeah. And it's like, but he made them all on his, like in his own house.
Yeah.
And he just would inject them. And they're like, all right. And then you just sit back and he looks like a guy who would. He's one of those guys whose eyes are like permanently like high shut.
Yeah.
You know, like, hey, man. Hey, man, are you a microscope? Oh, you're the mailman? That's funny. Sometimes you're all just microscopes.
Right. Perhaps he has brain damage.
Yes.
But even though Jack Parsons' days were menial, his nights were still dedicated to magic. Since his elemental was...
Yeah, who's this new elemental?
Well, that's the thing. Since she's no longer around to collaborate in sex magic rituals, he oscillated between brief sexual relationships and just plain old hiring sex workers participate in the sex magic.
That's what Aleister Crowley did for years, because he actually kind of helps, because then you don't get all the emotions involved.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Nothing emotional at all, huh?
It's true sex work. It's contracting at the end of the day.
Yeah, man. It's like, like Jimmy Carter goes and builds all those houses.
Yeah.
What if instead of he was doing that, he was sucking dick through all of these little towns?
We just don't know what's kept him alive all these years, do we?
I don't know what it is. I heard it was Pedialyte.
But nevertheless, during this time, Jack Parsons carried out a series of rituals over what he called 40 days of madness and horror.
Okay.
When thoughts of death and suicide almost overtook his entire being, Jack came to think of this time as his crossing of the abyss.
The abyss.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, after this, because he felt, you know how they say, like, in religion, I don't feel this, right? But people have felt this. Or, like, there was letters from Mother Teresa, one of the biggest problems, how we know she was a fucking faker and
she's a
liar.
She's a scam.
Right?
Yeah.
She wrote in her journals that she lost touch with God. That she felt that she used to be in the constant presence of God, and then one day it was gone, and now she's just like this husk, and she's kind of like operating through like kind of like, I should be doing this, but I'm also going to create a bunch of PR ops for the church while I'm doing it. Take a look at my fucking my hoodie, my virgin, whatever her hat is called.
I don't think she was a virgin. I bet you she fucked.
You think so?
Hey, man,
I think so.
A couple of those guys. Sometimes you got some guy dying of leprosy right there, and he's like, Mama. Come on.
Just one more time.
Just give it one little lick.
Well, absolutely. You
know? And she's so used to it. She's been so covered in it. And she's like, I've always wanted to know what human soup tasted like.
I can see that she may have licked a leopard's dick.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It falls
off. That's literally the word of sucker. which is like to give help. What is it? Yeah, and help. S-U-C-C-O-R.
Sukkar.
Sukkar. But so Jack Parsons,
yes,
bringing it all back around.
Right.
He was suffering from the same magical, like, abyss. Like, yeah, he lost all touch with it. He used to be such an intrinsic part of his life. And he loved operating, and he used to feel it all the time. He was, again, he was, like, always with the knocks and the things knocking over and that kind of shit. He loved all of it. He was obsessed with it. But it all fell away, he didn't know what to do. So He was just like, he had a vision. It showed back up. He said he was doing nothing. He was like, he kind of given all the magic up. He said he had a dream that Babylon showed back up and was like, kid, you're back in the game.
Oh,
and
so
he decided to go back in, and he decided to like make this like rip off like ritual, essentially, because The Crossing of the Abyss ritual isn't even an OTO ritual.
You say ripoff, I say remix.
See, he's learning.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely
it.
Yeah.
Now, the so-called abyss was a concept used by the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn as a way to explain the last stage of a magical journey that was supposed to end in becoming one with the universal consciousness.
And then Alistair, it's supposed to be, truly neutral.
Why would you ever want to be part of the universal consciousness? Twitter has taught us one thing. I don't want to know what you're thinking.
Well, I don't care
anymore. I'm done.
You're talking about the endless creationary mix that lies behind the skeleton of the Kabbalah.
Mm-hmm. The universal consciousness is much more peaceful than that.
When we got him hungover like this, It's kind of good because we can both like convex at him with these concepts.
I'm getting railroaded here. Also, that for some reason that did you kind of turned me on there. It's very feminine energy you just provided me.
No, I have big tit energy.
Yeah, you do.
But he retrofitted all this. So the abyss thing, Aleister Crowley branded after this for his AA, for that group.
Well, according to the Golden Dawn's interpretation, the abyss is a chasm of existence in which our binary conceptions dissolve.
Yeah, dude.
And once one enters the abyss, you either pass through and enter a mystical realm beyond good and evil where all is one.
Cool.
Or you plummet into madness.
Is it fun madness, though? Or is it horrible?
It's eating
your own skin. And
you
stuff.
Become what's his name from The Flash. You become that actor.
The reverse. Oh, Ezra Miller?
Oh, yeah.
Ezra
Miller.
You become that guy you're just like stealing candy out of a bank, like at a bank bowl, like, and then you run across the street and you grab a child, and then you run across the street and you take all the taquitos off the top of a 7-Eleven, try to start a little cult.
Yeah, okay.
It's being out of pocket, I think they call it nowadays.
Gotcha.
Well, supposedly, once one does pass through the abyss, they meet the secret chiefs, the highest of the high when it comes to magical knowledge and understanding. And then, and only then, do you become one with the universal consciousness.
And if you remember, if we did it from our Aleister Crowley series, one of the biggest schisms in the Golden Dawn was the one guy being like, I'm the only person who talks to the secret chiefs. And then a new guy showing up being like, hey, guess what? Secret chief just called me. I'm the new guy who talks to the secret chiefs. And then apparently the whole thing is that, like, where are these chiefs at? Where are these guys at? Where are they? Like, do you have a picture of one? Like, do you have, like, I want to see their punch card from the local coffee shop.
I told you, they wouldn't be secret.
Yeah. Well, there's the secret chiefs, and of course, Blavatsky also had the Hidden Masters, and she had the exact same problem with people saying, I got a line into the Hidden Masters.
Right.
They told me that they don't want to talk to you anymore, and they told me that if you say that you're talking to the Hidden Masters, if you think that you're talking to the Hidden Masters, you're not actually talking to the Hidden Masters, you're talking to somebody else.
Yeah,
because I do that.
That's me. I call them. You don't call them. I call them.
Yeah, and they don't physically show up. You just kind of have a feeling that they show up, so you can just kind of say it.
That's what's cool about magic is that you just make it the fuck up. You just say whatever, and you just hopefully a bunch of people in hats, enough of them agree with you.
Yeah. PlayStation's better than all of this. I'm just happy that we have like video games and stuff now.
I mean, I would like to disagree with you, but the number of hours I've logged on my PlayStation absolutely agrees with you.
Yes. I know.
Well, supposedly the last person to try crossing the abyss was a Canadian accountant named Charles Stanfield Jones. He claimed to have crossed successfully, and he declared himself Master of the Temple in 1916.
No.
But was soon after arrested for walking naked through the streets of Vancouver.
Oh my God, he's like the guy from Coney 2012.
Yeah,
I remember that.
But you can't seem to separate the two. being master of the temple and then walking down the middle of the street naked in Vancouver. Because we saw a bunch of masters of the temple the last time we were in Vancouver.
Yes.
But Charles Stansfield Jones was actually made in a basically a moonchild ceremony with by Aleister Crowley. He is supposed to be one of Aleister Crowley's illegitimate children.
Right.
And so he was made by charged magical cum in a actual, what is the real homunculus ritual, which we'll get into later. He was made into one, and that's kind of what happened to him.
I'm not trusting a Canadian wizard. I don't even trust a Canadian accountant. That's a bizarre... That's bizarre.
I think there it is wizardry accounting. Yeah.
Oh, you don't want to do magic like that.
Well, if you want to do magic the hard way, I guess you can go ahead and
keep doing
it like that. But
shut up!
Yeah.
But the point is, Parsons was using knowledge from other magical disciplines and applying it to his own practices, taking what he wanted and needed for his own purposes.
He wanted to make his own thing. Because after the Babylon working, he was really sick of, like, I guess working, quote unquote, walking the steps of his master. So he was really trying at that point to, how do I be the legit new Aleister Crowley without all the trappings of Aleister Crowley's PR bullshit?
He just didn't want to get gaped.
Yeah, well, I think that is part of it because he just wouldn't submit, but technically he would not be able to be master of the temple without submitting. That is the 10th level. You're supposed to take it up the butt. Yes, that is the final level. That is what you're supposed to do.
Do they tell you that when you're in like level 3 or when you get to level 10, they're like, now bend over.
You show up at level, you literally show up at level 10 at the exam.
Oh my.
Yeah. And then a man dressed up as Saladin, like literally a big Arabian night guy, shows up and you're supposed to give yourself over, because that's what it is. It's the ego death of the man.
Yeah. Why are all these pineapples? What are these going to be used for?
You'll see. We're making a salsa.
Yeah. It's the Xenu reveal.
It's the Xenu. Yeah. It's like, you thought you were about to be in charge of air? Sorry, buddy. First things first.
Well, Xenu, I mean, at least it's kind of fun. You don't have to bleed from your asshole.
Yeah.
Have a good time with it.
It's just difficult. But
whatever you want to do.
Honestly, with Xenu, you just bleed from the wallet.
Yes, that's true.
Actually, I think that's worse.
Yeah.
Because that asshole, it'll heal. Mm. You know.
Yeah. No, my asshole's been doing great for about a year now.
Great.
Maybe longer. He's incredible.
Year and a half.
That's awesome, Marcus.
Yeah, I got to see how the California air is going to treat it, but I'm hopeful.
When you saw it?
You walk backwards a lot?
You know, actually, there's a big practice out here. It's like they do believe that if you show your butthole to the sun like an hour a day, it helps.
I've heard of this.
Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Actually, it's becoming very big in the alt-right.
What?
Unfortunate.
We'll talk about it later.
Okay. Jeez. I can't keep up anymore.
But he put together his own, like, he looked at this ritual because he knew Aleister Crowley, he did this, and he said that he got this word because, like, so Babylon told him when he wrote the Book of Babylon, there was a thing in there where he talked about, you're going to do this black pilgrimage. And so he was like, this is what Babylon was talking about when I channeled her, that I need to do this black pilgrimage, which is something that only other couple other esoteric groups had, like, even had workings for, because again, the whole point was, if you succeed, you become one with the universe, and if not, you become unrepentedly insane, right?
A lot of risk.
A lot of risk, quote unquote. But he put this together, and he said that he created his own version of what was called the Great Obligation, which is what Aleister Crowley wrote, because Aleister Crowley's Crossing the Abyss was a 40-day walk across the desert. Do you remember?
In China.
He faced the demon Terrazan, but he was in the fucking, like, the circle, and so Victor Neuberg watched from before. It's that story where he bottomed out for Victor Neuberg, because this is earlier in his magician's career.
I know, but I think when he said he finally crossed the abyss was when he was in China, when he went there with his wife, and he said, oh, hey, I crossed the abyss.
No, well, that's where the ritual was done. It took several, but the ritual was the 40-day walk. He got gaped. Remember, he fought himself as a demon in the circle.
Yeah, Karanzan. And Victor Neuberg was terrified of him. He was tempted by both, like, this woman that he had a crush on. Like, she showed up naked.
Yeah,
brought her tits off.
Basically becoming Bugs Bunny is what he did. And he loved it, but he wanted to do his own thing and decidedly less sexy. But he wrote these great obligations. So he started calling himself, it was obviously Balerion and several different words for the devil. That was how he starts to be. This is his Antichrist working.
IOMNC, a member of the body of God, hereby bind myself on behalf of the whole universe, even as we are now physically bound under the cross of suffering, that I will lead a pure life as a devoted servant of the order, that I will understand all things, that I will love all things, that I will perform all things and endure all things, that I will continue in the knowledge and conversation of my holy guardian angel, that I will work without attachment, that I will work in truth,
okay,
that I will rely upon myself, and that I will interpret every phenomenon as a particular dealing of God with my soul, which makes you a very paranoid person.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And did you want to supersize that order? Or? Yeah,
of course I would.
Fantastic.
I'm eating for a god today.
That's good. That's good. We have adult Happy Meals now.
I actually would prefer a sadness meal.
Hmm.
Is that just a bullet and a bottle of wine?
I love that.
But he has all these like personal notes where he's like, he needs to be meticulous in his observations, which he was. And where did all those go? We'll answer that soon. And then you're supposed to be neat.
Did you say reticulous?
Mahalo. I'm going to start doing it. I'm going to work my way out of situations by saying
yes, that's all you have to do.
Rise from your grave.
If we're looking at the human element here,
mm-hmm,
it seems more like the purpose of Jack Parsons crossing the abyss. It was kind of a way to make sense of how his life had so quickly fallen apart after he was destroyed by the psychological tornado that was L. Ron Hubbard.
Right. So he got robbed. He lost his job. He lost his chick. And now he's just kind of alone searching because he lost his God also.
Yes, yeah. Basically everything got destroyed. And then because he did write a book, he wrote this thing that he tried to, what a lot of magicians do. It's called the Manifesto of the Antichrist. That's where it begins.
Yeah.
And it ends on the analysis of the Master of the Temple.
Yeah.
Where he basically writes a bio of himself explaining why all of these things happened to me. It's because I let them happen to me because I was chosen to be born in a certain constellation.
He recast all of his failures as successes.
Okay.
You know, it's like everything happened. Everything leads up to this moment.
I had to be destroyed. This had to happen.
Well, you have to fail to succeed.
Yeah,
there's some truth to that.
I feel like, you know what, though? It's really a lot better. Succeed to succeed.
But it's not possible.
Sometimes it is. Some people just do it. Michael Jordan?
Yeah, he lost to
the Pistons.
But
he won more. We know him more from Michael Phelps.
Mm-hmm. He lost to depression.
Depression?
Weed. Michael B. Jordan.
He's actually done quite well.
That's what I'm saying.
He lost to the Fantastic Four.
Ooh, interesting. Michael Jackson never lost in his life.
I don't know about that.
It's coming up a lot recently.
He lost his childhood. That's why he's asking everyone if you've seen it.
Yeah. Damn, if you really want to get depressed, listen to that newly released audio recording of him on the phone talking about how his father treated him
it
growing
is
up.
Really bad. Did you listen to it?
No.
He's just like, it's
intense. He's like talking about getting hosed down.
They used to cover me in oil. They come and hit me with sweet. It was like, but it's also in... It's in Michael Jackson's voice saying the most harrowing shit you've ever heard in your life.
Yeah.
Dang. All right.
Well, after the 40 days were done, he wrote the autobiography, but at the same time, he also decided to define his libertarian principles in the aforementioned political tract, Freedom is a Two-Edged Sword.
Y'all need to read that shit. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I bet. In his tract, he not only espoused libertarianism, he also responded to his treatment at the hands of the government, denouncing the increasingly intolerant nature of post-war American society.
Cancel culture.
Uh-huh. I mean, he did make a bunch of bombs.
He was feeling guilty.
Yeah, I think so.
And in this, Parsons was absolutely correct in his reading of the situation. When I say increasingly intolerant nature of post-war American society, I mean basically anybody who doesn't conform needs to get the boot.
You go get out.
You gonna get out.
But instead of suggesting, say, social or political reform, Parsons maintained that the only way to solve intolerance was with the arrival of Babylon.
He's on brand.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who would be, quote, good with the sword of freedom.
It's me.
Nice.
It's me, Babylon.
Yeah.
Me bringing you free.
I feel like that's at the CPAC merch store.
Me money. Yes.
Sword of freedom.
Yeah. Sword of freedom.
Yes. This commemorative Stephen Miller sword of freedom. Now only with three easy payments of $49.95, you too can get this brilliant obsidian cleaver of human rights.
Whoa.
Now, Parsons actually seemed to be on a bit of a manic kick by the time he crossed the abyss. Soon after the ritual, he contacted Wilford Smith, his old rival and mentor, saying that he, Parsons, was the Antichrist.
I'm the Antichrist. I know. Big whoop. Big deal. Jumping the shark. But I need a conference with you, buddy.
Yeah.
And is he still pumping gas on the weekends?
Yep.
He's the Antichrist.
So the Antichrist is pumping gas.
Hey, that sounds like a fucking old-fashioned song. What's this? But,
The Levin brothers or the Leuven brothers?
The Leuven brothers. Yeah, it could maybe. I don't know. Leuven brothers like to go more old school with it. They like to go very, very old. It's more of a Jerry Jeff Walker song.
Okay.
Or maybe a John Prine song.
Yeah, it's a John Prine song.
Yeah.
I'm just the Antichrist. I'm just pumping gas.
That's it. It's that easy. It's a simple man telling a simple story.
Look at me bend over.
You just
lick my ass.
Oh. All right. Well, it took a turn.
Well, you know, we need to pair you with a guitarist.
Yeah. By the way, you need a lyricist, like a guy who writes the book, the libretto. That's what he needs.
I know. By the way, the person who writes the lyrics is more difficult than the actual singer. But the when we had a chance to go perform in Grand Rapids, I believe it was Grand Rapids.
I can see his point on that. Writing a song is much more difficult than singing a song.
I remember I did see the thing where Elton John can write songs off of like instruction manuals and stuff. Like he just like, and he only writes songs that are easy for him to write.
That's also learned that Billy Joel doesn't like We Didn't Start the Fire.
From who?
He said he didn't like the song because he came up with the lyrics first, not the music. But anyway, John Prine's son listens to the show.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Yes,
hi.
Because we had a chance to perform in the same venue as they did.
No way.
Remember? In Grand Rapids.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
It was Todd Snyder and John Prine's son.
Good work. Yeah. Well, I love your father's music.
And
does my father. My father's a gigantic John Prine fan.
Absolutely. Fantastic.
And I will discover yours.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we done talking about John Prine?
I think we could wrap it up.
All right. Well, using his magical alias, Balerion Antichrist.
Thank you.
As Henry had mentioned.
Actually, it's Dr. Balerion Antichrist. I didn't go to 12 years of Antichrist school to be called Mr. Antichrist.
I see.
Well, Parsons wrote a manifesto appropriately titled The Manifesto of the Antichrist.
Got it.
Which pitted him against the evil forces of the Christian church, which both Parsons and Crowley, they referred to it as the Black Brotherhood.
What's weird is that it was so unpopular to go against the Catholic Church at the time period that it was actually...
Was it Catholic Church or just the entirety of Christianity?
According to them, it's Catholicism. That was like the big bad. That's the big bad. But yes, Christianity applies. It is all applied. But the Black Brotherhood actually had to be like discerned by allegory.
Mm.
Right? Because they went and they were like, allegory. He never said it. That it was the church, because technically he used a lot of like Christian imagery in his spell workings.
Right.
So as the Antichrist, he's good.
Yeah.
That's how he sees it.
If you think, well, it's not the Christ. Yeah. But Antichrist is about trying to create a movement that is going to take us away from organized religion.
Yeah. 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 That's how we saw it. The Antichrist is the harbinger of a new era, which in, you know,
women wear pants.
Yeah.
You know, I'm starting to think we maybe need to get rid of this disorganized religion. Seems like everyone's lost their fucking minds.
Yeah.
So maybe we need to organize a religion again.
We definitely need to organize it again. Yeah. But all of these people, they lost the organization. They lost their fucking minds. They really actually do need that.
We need reorganize religion.
Reorganize.
Yeah, that's right. Well, while all this does sound goofy, Parsons was using all this imagery to make some damn good points.
Well, you know, he's also, again, it is goofy. Yeah. You know, I feel the vibes. I know. If I try to describe this to my father, I mean, he'd just walk away from me.
Yeah.
Right? I know that. But to them, it was very real.
Well, he felt that the political witch hunts of the Red Scare were, quote, symptomatic of the authoritarianism inherent in the Judeo-Christian values that underpinned the whole country, a belief system that upheld racism and the subjugation of women and persecuted free thought.
Yeah, man, get with it, dog.
Yeah. I'm with it.
It's free. It's forward-thinking stuff in 1949.
Yes.
But put nicely, if we're giving Parsons the benefit of the doubt here, magic was pretty much the only thing he had left. And he'd built his entire life to revolve around magic and magical thought. So he can be excused for mixing in good points with stuff that might be a little difficult to swallow.
And all the book Sex and Rockets by John Carter, it is a love letter to Jack Parsons. But even they at the very end are like, so science, he had a lot of success. In magic,
We all love him. Like, they all, like, it was like this right. kind of thing. Like, we loved his energy, but he technically was one of the least successful magicians of all time.
Yeah. We say that this is a story of a student, and he is technically a good student.
That's
but
the idea.
I don't know if he would have graduated magna cum laude.
I don't know. I still feel like if he had some rearing up in a different generation, who knows?
Maybe.
Well, he's like John Starks with the New York Knicks, my favorite player of all time. Not very good.
Yeah.
What?
Starks is your favorite player. Interesting.
Yeah, John Starks.
Really? Why?
Shooting guard.
You say he's
badass
not good, though.
Badass dude, man. Came out of nothing, dude. Made something out of his life. Well, he had flashes of greatness, but then he didn't sleep before game 7 against the Rockets, and then he went like 2-for-25, and then they lost.
See, this is how we keep it equal.
Yeah.
As if he can tell us something that he knows. Yeah. You can tell, look at it, you just told us. Yeah. I didn't know who that was.
But John, he's a great shooting guard.
Yeah, I know John Starks. It's as surprising as a favorite, though.
Yeah. I used to argue he was better than Jordan, and I was wrong.
But by 1949, 2 years after the Babylon working and Jack's subsequent break with L. Ron Hubbard, Parsons finally gathered himself and got to work regaining his security clearance. Time to get back to work once again.
Okay.
In court, Parsons both denied affiliation with communism and defended the OTO, calling his magical order a non-political religious organization.
Which is also kind of funny because he had to send a big letter of resignation to Aleister Crowley leaving the OTO because he was so over it because he said you weren't doing the real workings anymore. Now I'm going to do it. And then that's why he did a 12-day ritual where he prayed every day and then looked at a thing called the Antichrist and masturbated as much as he could.
Yeah.
And then nothing... happened.
Very communist.
But he called himself Master of the Temple at the end of it, but then again, Aleister Crowley said it wasn't legit because he didn't actually pass the test.
This is McCarthy era?
Yeah. No.
Jenny McCarthy.
This is before.
Yeah, Jenny McCarthy.
This is pre-McCarthy, because McCarthy's like mid-50s, 54 or something like that. No, this is 49. This is a little bit before that.
Okay. So they didn't really have any, they didn't even know what a communist really was.
No, they had a very good idea of what a communist was.
I feel like at the time they had a clearer vision of what a communist was than we even do now. I feel like it was happening, right?
But it was almost like the witch trials in Salem, because they'd be like, well, you had a party and there was a charcuterie board.
Yeah.
We think you might be a communist.
They would just throw random shit.
Like, if you were gay, you're a communist.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, they kind of started from the inside out, where they started with these defense contractors. They started with the scientists, the people that were inside, like, the Defense Department and in the government. They started with them. By the time it got to McCarthy, that's when it got out to like
all of
us. Oh, yeah, let's go after fucking Dalton Trumbo. Like, Who gives a shit? He read screenplays. He wrote Spartacus. Are you really going to fuck with this guy who wrote Spartacus?
Then it really shows that the U.S. government started implanting themselves in the Hollywood system.
Absolutely.
In order to use the Hollywood system as a mouthpiece for their ideals, which is that was a thing at the time.
That's not even a conspiracy.
It's not a conspiracy at all. That's Ronald Reagan fucking, he turned coat on so many people.
Yeah. I know, when they tried to unionize, so did Hulk Hogan. That's why Jesse Ventura doesn't like him.
Yeah.
Ventura tried to unionize. Hogan snitched him out.
Interesting.
Yeah. And Ronald Reagan named names. That motherfucker.
Yeah, he named that monkey like 3 times.
Bonzo, Bonzo, Bonzo.
Oh, wow.
Goes to Bitburr.
Isn't that great? I think it's early onset Alzheimer's.
Who?
What?
But Parsons also tried to move on from Marjorie Cameron. He began seeing an Irish woman named Gladys Gohan and moved from the home he'd shared with Marjorie to new digs at Redondo Beach.
Oh.
Reportedly, when friends during this time would ask how his wife was, he'd drolly say, quote,
she's in Mexico getting divorced.
Wait, the Irish chick?
No, his wife.
The other one.
Marjorie, the other one.
But they're not officially broken up then.
No, they're still married.
She's down in Mexico.
Sounds like she's having a
divorce.
Sounds like she's having a great time.
Yeah, she was having a really good time.
Cabo Wabo.
Yeah, she was getting balled out in a fucking artist commune while he was sitting here being like, I'm an antichrist. He was being a sad sack.
And indeed, divorce proceedings were well underway as the 40s became the 50s.
That must have been controversial in itself. Makes him a communist.
But even though Parsons was actively trying to clear his name and return to defense work, the FBI was not quite satisfied with the testimony of Jack Parsons. And Parsons, in turn, wasn't doing a good job of keeping his nose clean.
No, because he was a fucking... He's the sword, man. He's Babylon's sword, dog.
Okay.
See, Parsons, in true libertarian form, he did whatever he wanted to do using his own principles as a guiding light.
That's the whole thing, man. But he's like an outdoor cat.
All right.
But in doing this, Jack ignored the fact that the rest of the world did not play by his libertarian rules. Mm. Or, should I say, his lack of rules.
Oh.
Yeah, dude.
And that's how he almost got charged with espionage.
It seems to happen a lot.
How the hell did that happen? Was he leaking documents?
Well, see, when
very presidential of him.
Yes, get political.
Mahalo, man.
Yeah,
Mahalo.
Absolutely, dude.
See, when Parsons briefly re-entered the scientific workforce, he got connected with an organization called the American Technion Society. The American Technion Society was providing technical and weapon knowledge to Israel, which was then a little less than a year old. Brand new Israel.
Ooh, nice. That new Israel smell.
Yeah, dude, they've had some cool weapons for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
They got that dome.
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, Parsons also got a job working on chemical plant design and construction at the Hughes Aircraft Company, owned by Howard Hughes. So Parsons figured that since he'd worked on this stuff.
Yeah, this is my stuff.
This is my stuff. I'm working on it. It's okay to give it to whoever I want.
It's just stuff.
Uh-oh.
Again, it's an idea, all right? Is a piece of paper good or bad? No. Is a file good or bad?
Yeah.
Right?
And so he handed the work he did for Hughes over to the American Technion Society, who handed it to Israel.
Yeah, well, so I've sort of like accidentally kind of became like, he sort of was kind of working for the Mossad, and he didn't know that.
He got a hair's breadth away from giving state secrets to another country.
He just did that thing.
Yeah.
Very, very Clue of him.
And this, of course, drew the
Communism was a red herring.
Ooh, I love that movie.
This, of course, drew the heavy attention of the FBI.
Yeah, yeah.
And Jack was quickly fired after making a powerful enemy in Howard Hughes, who was a virulent anti-Semite.
I don't know if he's in our wheelhouse, but I would be fascinated to do something on Howard Hughes.
He's a weirdo of the highest order. Yeah.
I mean, I like him, but you know, I like
the story.
He's the story.
Super anti-Semitic, super racist. He's got a whole thing going.
But him wearing like the tissue boxes on his foot. Now, I don't like him. I'm just saying, I like the concept of him shuffling around with all like the long fingernails and stuff. It's fun.
Man, I can find you a guy who keeps jars of his own urine. I can find you that guy.
Are you about to point at yourself? And the guy is me.
He's got two thumbs and keeps jars of his own urine.
Yeah,
he's pretty cool.
But this episode in Jack's life did have a positive effect. Once Marjorie Cameron heard about Jack's troubles with the FBI, she returned from Mexico to give the marriage another shot.
That's nice.
Yeah. Well, maybe she was turned on by espionage. Mm.
Perhaps. They stopped divorce proceedings and moved back to Pasadena, just one block away from the former site of the parsonage.
Hmm.
Now, Parsons was starting to realize that he probably wasn't going to get his security clearance back anytime soon, if ever.
Yeah, that whole giving of government secrets.
It's light espionage. Yeah. Okay.
So he started working at powder companies again. And by 1951, he'd set up shop right here in North Hollywood with his own explosives business and called it the Parsons Chemical Manufacturing Company.
Is that fun?
What do they do there?
They made fucking booms.
Yeah, man. Nice.
Big booms.
They did it for finally an innocent group of people, vaguely innocent. They did it for Hollywood.
That's great.
They did it for show business. They manufactured explosives, pyrotechnics, fog effects.
Yeah.
Specialization, though, squibs.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, the little things that make
squib.
Make gunshot wounds look realistic.
Oh, my God. You should have seen the set of that movie, Rust. They had some of the best squibs of all time.
So realistic. And can you believe it? Have you seen Terrifier 2 yet?
I have not.
It's honestly, it's good. It's fine. It's fun. But they finally brought back juicy squibs.
See, that's the thing, is that there's never going to be a better squib in cinematic history. No one is ever going to top the boardroom scene in RoboCop when Ed 209 fills that fucking dude.
That's the best.
I agree. Also, Juicy Squibs are going to be performing at the Paramore this weekend.
Mahalo.
Yes, you're going to love him.
I'm doing it now. Yeah. I'm doing it for him.
How are you doing it?
Yeah.
Well, at the same time, Parsons returned to the groovy life, hosting parties for the Beat Generation crowd that looked at Parsons as somewhat of an old man, even though Parsons was only in his mid-30s. See, Parsons, he's still rocking out the classical music.
Yeah.
You know, he's liking the violins. He's getting all weird with it.
Well, that's what he likes, because that's what he is, his ritual music.
Yeah. But the cool kids, they're into jazz.
Oh, yeah. It's going to do that. Remember that?
I
did that before. It's going to do that.
It's really good.
Like Billy Elliot.
Yeah.
Billy Eilish, maybe?
Billy Elliot was that movie about the Irish boy who danced on the floor.
Again, it's Billie Holiday.
It's Billie Holiday.
I think that was the one that was Jimi Hendrix's nanny.
Oh.
Maybe. Maybe.
I don't know.
I can say whatever.
Maybe you're thinking of Slash. I think you're thinking of Slash.
Slash.
Yeah. I wish.
Well, they looked at Parsons, these new cool kids. They looked at him as an old fogey. He's still wearing a suit, vest, and tie every single day. He's a bit of a pre-war relic.
What the fuck are they wearing?
You know, like fucking open tank shirts. They're wearing like, you know, turtlenecks.
Yeah, it's Charlie Parker, man.
Yeah, no, man.
That's pretty edgy. Those turtlenecks are pretty hip.
It was revolutionary at the time. They didn't know that a shirt could extend up to the chest.
Okay.
But Parsons parties, there was still a good time. Charlie Parker came once.
Oh, that no it. Kidding.
Yeah.
And then he probably fucked Marjorie.
Yeah. Oh. Probably. Well, seemingly infused with a new energy, Parsons even formed his own religion, perhaps as a response to the increasing popularity of Dianetics.
Mm.
Yeah, he was getting, there was a little bit of jealousy in it, because like, because yeah. Dianetics hit hard.
Yeah, it did. And Dianetics is making a lot of money. $600 for the first course of Dianetics, and that's in like 1952 money.
It's a lot of money.
Yep. Yeah. And Jack thought that he needed something to replace the indirection that compromised the OTO.
Which is hilarious because it's actually very directed. It's very directed.
Yeah,
he just wanted something else. He wanted something simpler.
But the other thing, the other side of that is that that whole like every man and woman is a star thing, that tends to get, that tends to keep shit from getting done sometimes.
Yeah, it is like herding cats.
Yeah.
But it is, yeah. But at the same time, what he was trying to do was what he thought that, in a way, what Elrond, which we brought up a little bit last episode, is that he took the arcane, highly intense rituals, right? Because I didn't cover the full detail of like how these rituals are done, because I think it makes a lot of people go to sleep.
Yeah.
And I think they don't like to hear it.
No.
But what it is days and days and days of role playing. Like literally it's like you memorize pages of these like long tomes and stuff. It does sort of seem in a way what Jack Parsons was doing was a proto version of chaos magic at this point, where what he wanted was to strip it away. Because he said that in his mind, LRH with Scientology was already stripping away a lot of the super ornate ritual shit and trying to get to quote unquote the core, which was for LRH giving him money.
Mm-hmm.
But for Jack Parsons, he's like, I want to put the tools of magic to ruin other people's lives. Like it ruined mine, but I want to put those tools into other people's hands and I'm going to do it like sleek. I'm going to strip it down.
Well, his religion would be created for a modern spirit. He wanted it to have an austere simplicity of approach.
Well, that'll be fun.
Make it super simple. That's like, what he wanted. He wanted it simple.
He's trying to make his iPod.
Yeah. Although I'm not entirely sure that he achieved this goal based on the religion's description.
Mm.
Mostly Jack's religion was a combination of Crowley's teachings and the Babylon prophecy that Parsons had created himself. But mixed in was a horror novel called Darker Than You Think. Which is a great name for a horror novel.
Sure.
Did you get to read any of it?
I did not. I got to read the synopsis of it. It was published first as a novella in one of Jack's Sci-Fi Digests, and was later it was so popular that it was expanded to a novel. Darker Than You Think is a werewolf novel that tells a secret history of humanity.
It's cool, actually.
Sweet.
In which mankind and werewolves have been locked in a hidden battle for hundreds, if not thousands of years. And also the werewolves can sometimes turn into other animals, depending.
There are other types of were. There's were pigs and were ducks. That's fun, right?
I want to be a
seagull.
Were pig.
You already are. Every time I want to know where Kissel goes, I just go, were pig, were pig, and then I hear him. Oink, oink.
How the piggies eat.
Yeah, I remember Christmas story.
Yeah, it's Christmas time too, isn't it?
It is.
Yes.
Well, in this world, in the world of Darker Than You Think, medieval witch hunts were actually a means of protecting mankind from werewolves. And the modern skepticism towards witchcraft is an attitude deliberately fostered by hidden werewolves as a way to gain a quote-unquote breathing spell for a counterattack.
It's very pulpy. The book's very pulpy. It's really fun. I read about 50 pages of it. It was like, it's cool. You can find it on the Internet Archive.
Yeah. I love the werewolves.
No,
I do too.
Yeah.
They're fun. They're fun little creatures.
They are, and it's fun to work werewolves into a religion.
Why not?
Of course,
Mix shit up anyway. Have fun with it.
Yeah, and the novel's apparently amazing based on the reviews I read, and I'm glad that you enjoyed it as well.
No,
and Parsons was apparently first drawn to it because of the story's description of a scarlet-haired woman riding a great beast, which was, of course, supposed to be the end game of the Babylon working.
But the idea is that we each have a werewolf inside of us we're trying to release.
Yeah.
That's what that is. The werewolf is the primal energy that we're trying to get to by eating nut butter and raw liver and being natty.
Being natty, yeah. It's
natty.
It requires a full
natural.
Moon, natural.
Oh, like Natty Light.
No, yeah. Natural, like not on steroids, like the Liver King.
Yeah, ah. I am doing a Liver King, like, it's my thing. Yeah.
What's the Liver King?
Well, Liver wow. King eats a bunch of liver, and then he's like, that's why I got all buff, but it turns out he spent almost $12,000 a month on steroids.
Yeah, he lied about not being on steroids.
I see. But using the elements of this werewolf novel, along with what he'd learned from Crowley and what he created himself, Parsons created a religion called the Witchcraft, ooh, which is a cool name for
okay,
a religion.
That is cool.
And he priced a basic course of instruction, $10.
That's all you need for the secrets of the universe?
Cheaper than Dianetics.
Yeah. Unfortunately, though, the witchcraft never got a chance to take off. Even though Jack's life was starting to level out by the early 50s. The FBI finally dropped their investigation into Parsons, concluding that while he was certainly a fruitcake, to use the parlance of the times,
oh, yeah.
It's a fun 1950s term,
yeah.
He was not a communist. But the damage okay. had already been done. The eccentricities that were excused during the war became liabilities in the 1950s, when the existence of all grooviness was threatened by the Levittown brand of conformity.
Whatever, man.
Therefore, Jack's security clearance to work on DOD classified information and or material was forever revoked.
Revoked!
And so Parsons decided he's got to clear his head.
He does.
Oh, yeah, man. It's difficult.
I hope he doesn't do it with a fucking shotgun.
Well, he might do it with nitroglycerin in a couple of months.
Well, he and Marjorie planned to move to Mexico for a few months, where Parsons said he might grow grapes to make brandy.
It's incredible.
Or he might build a pyramid to, quote, reestablish the ancient glory.
And if I know anything about my sweet magicians, I think once you get to that first level of pyramid, you're going to be like, God, maybe let's just get to the grapes.
Yeah, maybe just go with the grapes. Yeah, can you make wine out of those or just eat them?
But on the very day that Parsons and Marjorie were planning to leave, Jack got a phone call from a company called the Special Effects Corporation. They specialized
in
special effects.
Oh!
They needed a rush order on a batch of explosives before Jack left. And Jack figured, why the hell not?
Yeah.
I got some time if I work quickly. And who couldn't use a bit of extra cash before an extended vacation?
It seems like something you don't want to rush.
Mm. I feel like that he was distracted.
Yeah.
Yeah, a bit so. Now, when it came to explosives, Jack was what you'd call a collector. His storage space included cartons of nitroglycerin, trinitrobenzene, and a substance known as pern, which is apparently one of the most powerful explosives in existence.
Okay, better get that box of that out of my fucking from under my bed. I didn't know what that was.
Yeah, I'm just going to put it by all these candles and matches and see what happens.
We'll see.
And this is in addition to all of the other stuff whose properties were only known to Jack. His storage space, like other, scientists and people that were into this type of shit, they'd go in there and they look at all this and they're like, what the fuck is all this shit?
And he's that's my family. That's my family. But he also, he might have been doing a little bit of light arms dealing as well. Like there's some story that he's
saying. Seems like you guys are really kind of whitewashing all the
no, I'm not whitewashing. I haven't heard about this. This seems like one of those patented Zabrowski exaggerations.
No. It's Sex and Rockets. They basically said that one of his friends were like, because there was a period of time of how was he getting his money? It was because in between jobs, they were like, I think he might have been selling nitroglycerin to a bunch of people.
I mean, he's got a bunch of it.
That's the thing. He's got it.
Yeah.
Closer than we are to selling it.
It's just sitting there. It's like the clock and the candlestick and Beauty and the Beast. If they're not exploding, they don't serve any purpose. So you know how many times he comes home and he's just like, it's like they're all just sitting there like, just here gathering dust.
Yeah, indeed. Also, they made him gay, huh? The candlestick. A little offensive, I thought.
What?
The candlestick.
Uh-huh.
They made him gay.
Where?
In Beauty and the Beast.
Okay.
The cartoon.
Why is that offensive?
Yeah, what are you talking about?
Flame.
Oh, because of the flamer. God,
I just don't
That's
even
know. That's a long road to walk, I my just, friend.
No, it depends on what they did it wrong. Here?
I just
That's
feel
Disney,
like,
and they put dicks in everything, too.
I don't know, but my hollow's going to fix it.
I don't know if my hollow's going to fix it.
I don't know if the spirit of
I've mentioned this before. I've talked about this for a decade. You can archive how I've defended or said that's a little inappropriate.
Actually, I vaguely remember a roundtable episode in which there was this.
No,
was
the
discussed.
Original Lumiere was a pussy hound. The original Lumiere was fucking the mop.
I don't know.
The duster.
The duster.
The duster. Yeah. Wasn't fucking Angela Lansbury. Wasn't fucking the teapot.
No, I mean, honestly, and that's sad.
Yeah.
She should have fucking.
She just died.
Yeah.
I know, whatever.
She did.
I know. I mean, it's nice.
Sad. I loved her.
Sad. It's sad.
I loved her.
Well, as I said, the trip down to Mexico was supposed to be an extended stay. So Jack had emptied out his explosive storage space at the Special Effects Corporation, and he'd moved carton upon carton of highly volatile materials in cardboard boxes to the laundry room of his house.
What is happening?
He's a crazy person.
And it was in that laundry room full of explosives, using a tin coffee can as a mixing bowl because he had no beakers or flasks on hand to properly do the job. That's where Jack Parsons decided to fill a rush order of explosives.
This isn't good.
No.
But Jack and Marjorie weren't planning on leaving their house empty. They'd already had friends move in to take over the lease while they were gone. Those friends probably weren't fully aware of what Jack was storing in the laundry room when they agreed to move in.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But regardless, at 5 p.m. that day, one of those friends saw Jack rushing around the laundry room, pouring explosive liquids from one test tube to the other and putting the results in an oven while he waited around for his concoctions to coalesce.
Sexy guy.
I guess so.
And reportedly, one of these friends said to Parsons, "For God's sakes, Jack, don't blow us up." And to this, Parsons maniacally laughed and said,
"Don't worry about it."
I am a little bit worried about it. Well, you saying that actually makes me worry about it more.
What about my maniacal laughter? Does it make you feel comforted?
I do.
Okay. Things will be fine.
It's not often that you get to say famous last words and actually mean them. Mm. They were famous last words. That's the last words Parsons said to anyone.
What?
Yes. 8 minutes later, two almost simultaneous blasts blew off the doors of the laundry room, broke the windows, collapsed the ceiling frames, and stripped the walls of plaster. And when the smoke cleared, the first people on the scene saw Jack Parsons in a pool of blood, missing an arm and the left side of his face.
Yeah, all man. Right. This is, he's two-faced.
Yeah. You're going to want that part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always like having both parts.
It helps.
It does.
It helps. But incredibly, Parsons was still alive when the ambulance loaded him up, even though his right arm was so thoroughly blasted off that it was never found.
Hear me out. How am I doing, guys? Well,
I think I'm going to need a bandage.
Reportedly, Jack struggled to say something on the ambulance ride, but no one could understand what he was trying to say.
Ah, whole missing the face thing.
Yeah.
I think we could be okay.
It's very scary. You can't make fun of the victim. He is a victim of explosions.
He blew himself up because he's a maniac.
You see my tongue?
Yeah. It's not so much here.
It's so much here. So much here. It's so much here.
Jack, just level with me, Jack. How serious is he?
Well, he's just like holding his legs. It's like, which one's left? Which one's right?
And so by the time Parsons reached the hospital, he was pronounced dead at the age of 37.
Yeah,
wow.
Man.
Now, Jack's mother, Ruth, was actually supposed to go on the Mexico trip with Jack and Marjorie. And Jack and Marjorie had actually been living with Ruth in the lead up to their departure. But when Jack's mother heard of Jack's death, she swallowed a bottle of sedatives with a liquor chaser. The only people around were other old people. They weren't quick or strong enough to stop her.
Dude, her roommate was an invalid. I think that was the term at the time. I don't know if you use that term anymore. But it was a bedbound woman, right? She couldn't move. She just, whatever.
We know.
Old as fuck.
Yeah.
And she apparently just watched in horror as she choked down these pills and then just died in front of her, just going, hip, hip.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
mama. Hip. Well, not, you know, no one did anything. And they're also, their closeness is why there was also sort of like weird incest rumors about Jack Parsons and his mother, because they were, but then I didn't find anything else about that. I think it's slander.
Yeah, I don't know where you found this claim that Jack Parsons, there was a mother. Yeah, he found this claim that there was a picture of Jack Parsons and his mother having sex with a dog.
Yeah, it was a bunch of shit. It's just like, it's all over, man.
Yeah.
But what kind of...
Well, you must have really searched for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's called research, buddy.
Okay.
And it's called production.
It's fine.
And I'm out there, man. I'm out in these fucking streets.
I appreciate all the research.
Well, Marjorie Cameron, meanwhile, seemed to be more single-minded. When she heard about Jack's death, she was more concerned with the 3 pounds of weed sitting in her house.
That's like, she did the thing that she, I can't even name names. It reminds me of a very specific person in our past that like comes to the house, it's all exploded. And the first thing she's like,
Oh no, the weed.
The weed.
Oh fuck, it's the weed. Because she has to run again.
I mean, that's
a
serious crime. You go to real jail.
Yeah, that's what she was. She was less concerned about the weed and more concerned about what would happen if the gaggle of investigators who were showing up to the house, what would happen if they found the weed?
Because also, it's like, to be honest, that's the one thing.
3 pounds of weed.
I know. A lot.
But I also want to say, Cameron, listen, the house is also full of explosives. I think they're going to also maybe have a thing to say about the fact that he has been storaging just fucking piles of nitroglycerin.
Is that illegal? How is this a crime? He's
it was illegal. It was highly illegal.
He just got investigated for espionage.
So Cameron called her friend Julie and told her to bring the largest purse she had.
His old-fashioned way to do it, man.
And the two women were able to bypass a horde of cops and FBI agents with 3 pounds of weed stuffed into their purses and clothes.
It's like the end of Goodfellas.
Yeah.
It's like one of those two, especially because it's just so crazy. Like, so much shit's happened, and they lived this loosey-goose life for so long, and it's just, you know, obviously, it spun everybody out.
Yeah. I wonder how good that weed was. It was probably pretty mid.
I've heard mixed things about old weed. Some people say it's stronger now. Some people say that it was better then. But
there's
no way
it was better then.
There's
no way.
For my personal taste, it was certainly better then. I loved weed in the 90s.
Well, what? I miss regs sometimes.
Yeah, regs. Yeah.
You can still get them. You can get them.
I can get you fucking regs, man.
You give me regs?
Yeah, for bro.
Fuck yeah, bro.
Yeah, for bro.
Living in California now, we don't got to keep this shit a secret. We can talk openly.
Weed.
I think we've been talking openly about weed for quite a year.
We're like 2 decades.
Yeah.
But I would go, yeah, I could buy you bags of shake.
All right, cool. Bags of shake. Loving it. Getting into it. Getting back into weed.
Oh, I'll get you my favorite pre-rolls. You can try them out.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
Are you a sativa or indica guy?
Oh, I'm a sativa man.
Have you ever tried crack? Do you want to try it? Come on, man.
We'll see. I don't know. You know, California. California Marcus. I don't know if that works. Marcus, California. Maybe L.A. Marcus. Hollywood Marcus.
Hollywood Parks.
But then that's just a park in Hollywood. That's the Hollywood Parks system.
Hence the crack.
I like Hollywood Marcus. Let's go for it.
Mahalo, man.
Mahalo.
Absolutely.
Live from your grave.
Now, the investigation to the explosion found residue of mercury fulminate in a shredded coffee tin. It's assumed that Parsons had been using the coffee tin to mix the mercury fulminate because Jack's friend had seen Parsons using a coffee tin earlier. Because that's the thing, is that some of his friends are like, oh, Jack Parsons, he was too meticulous. He would never use anything like that. But no.
Absolutely not.
It was like a woman actually saw him like mixing shit in a coffee tin. Like, yeah, I don't have my beakers. Don't have anything here. I'm just having to use this coffee tin.
But that's also how he invented the fucking Jado. Mm-hmm. Like, it's how he did it.
Yeah.
They're just making it up as they went.
Well, it's thought that Jack may have accidentally dropped the tin and tried to catch it before it hit the ground. But when he whiffed it, the tin exploded when it hit the floor because mercury fulminate is highly volatile. You ever seen Breaking Bad?
Of course, I've seen some episodes there. I watched the last episode and I watched the whole thing in reverse. He turns out to be a great teacher. He died a nerd's death. This is like the nerdiest way to die.
I actually don't think so. I think the nerdiest way to die is to choke on a protractor. I think that this is actually a very, like, this is a cool way to die.
Oh, my beaker. Oh, no. If he would have caught it,
he
would be alive.
Yeah, I don't want to die in a goof him up.
I don't want to.
No.
I'm so afraid that my last word's going to be, oh, shit. And then that's it.
Yeah, no, I just don't want my last words to be, wait.
Boom.
No, yeah. I don't want that. But if you've seen Breaking Bad, first season of episode 2, remember when Walter White comes in and he's got that bag and he throws it down on the ground and it blows all the windows out.
Yes.
He convinces Tuco that's mercury fulminate.
Yeah, science.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that mercury fulminate, he might have been able to survive that blast. You know, it did, of course, blow his arm off and it did, it blast off half of his face.
Yeah, but we got boys fighting in the wars that had the same shit happen to them and we patched them up.
But the problem is that the laundry room was filled with explosives.
Yeah.
Right.
It was all the other explosives.
So when the mercury fulminate went off, all the other explosives went off almost immediately after.
It's Looney Tunes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You think Marjorie is still going to like me?
No, his
jawbone. Come here, Claire. Just sit on my face. Just one last time.
Please, God.
Now his jawbone was exposed. Great. His teeth were exposed. He's all fucked up. That, however, is the accepted version of the story. Mm. The one put forth by the authorities.
Lamestream media wants you to think that that's what happens, the fact that he was also very clumsy.
Yeah.
Well, true to a man of Jack's reputation, his death in the years since has become shrouded in the shadow of both multiple conspiracy theories and the possibility that his death was a case of magic gone wrong.
I mean, I think it's exactly what he would have wanted.
His
death just became another mystery for other people to decipher.
You say conspiracy theory. How did they somehow blame the Jews for it?
We'll get
because
to
every
it.
Conspiracy.
You mean the term merchant, which I read in the group in the book about the Saturn death cult. So.
That's if anyone's in conspiracy theory, they always just end that way.
So. Well, actually, this one, are the Jews involved? Yes,
they are.
They are involved, but not as the perpetrators.
No,
oh, thank God.
Yeah, of course, the FBI file surrounding the investigation into Jack's death is heavily redacted.
That is interesting.
That's
of
very
itself.
Interesting. And that leads some to believe that he might have been killed by any number of people or organizations, mostly for political reasons. Some think that Jack Parsons was killed by Howard Hughes as revenge for handing over company secrets to the Israelis. Mm. Because, as I said earlier, Hughes was a well-known anti-Semite.
Mm.
And relatedly, some think Jack Parsons was murdered by anti-Zionists who killed anyone who was even tangentially involved with the State of Israel. So, yes, part of the conspiracy theory, but that's not one. The perpetrators of the conspiracy theory.
I say drop the hate.
Yeah.
Wow.
Drop the hate.
Wow. You heard
love.
It here first.
You heard
it
here first. Some love.
Wow.
There were even rumors that Parsons was killed in a revenge served cold, stemming from his testimony years before that had put away LAPD police chief Earl Kynette,
yes.
who had, if you'll remember, tried to assassinate a fellow officer in a car bombing to cover up corruption.
And that's actually the one of all of them that I think that could have been a thing. It's that one, but I don't know.
Possibly.
That reminds me of when the Fleshbot Awards, I gave the best mainstream to porn award to China, the WWE wrestler, and she went on YouTube that night. And she said, Vance, holding the silver dildo I gave her, Vance, to Vince McMahon, revenge is a dish best served cold. And then she held up the silver dildo.
The big dildo, yeah.
Wait, because the dildo was itself cold?
Yeah, well, I don't know, because she was like, Vince, I made it. I got a porn award.
It was a cold
back
night.
Door to China.
It was a night in February. It
should have
really
been
cold.
Hot, because didn't she want her vagina to be like wet and receiving?
I don't know exactly what happened.
I don't know. I'm just being a backseat.
It was a smuggling. It was a movie about smuggling.
Now. Her clit was quite large.
Huge.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah, she was on the juice. She wasn't natty. She wasn't natty at all.
No, not natty. But in an explanation of suspicion that smacks a bit of Building 7, the reason why most people at least entertain the idea that Parsons was assassinated, that's because a chemical engineer named George Santmyers said that the explosion could have only come from beneath the floorboards.
There's no other way. That's no other possible way it could have come from anything else. Do explosions, thumb in this, right? The explosions just come from the sky. Yeah, you say a missile, sure.
What kind
but
of
let's just say anything
thunder.
Else. No, I just, hey, fuck you. I'm the expert, right?
Okay.
Fuck you. Fuck you, buddy, all right? Because explosives only come from the ground up.
But what about
all right? Because
all
they're like potatoes.
But the
all right, they come up like the carrots.
Yeah.
All right, that's what comes from the ground. It's explosives to carrots, all right? I ain't got time for this. You oppressing me, buddy.
The room is full of explosives.
Yeah, but it could only, he says it could only come from beneath the floorboards.
But what about the room full of explosives?
But the first explosive, not the second explosion.
You know
that's the second.
Being,
the room full of explosives. That's the second explosion.
When he's like this, he's being very un-Mahalo. Right? Now I'm using it as like a weapon. It's my two-edged sword.
I know it is.
But that's the thing. A lot of this doesn't make any practical sense. First of all, it's a pretty piss poor operation that waits until the day before Jack moves to Mexico to blow him up using a Byzantine plan to lure him into his laundry room with a last minute explosives order from the Special Effects Corporation, which would have required the involvement of multiple witnesses.
You fucking simp. I can't even believe this fucking guy after all these years.
Who am I simping for right now?
The U.S. government. All right, because when it comes down to it, of course they would choose the most highly unlikely, nay, impossible way to kill him because truth stranger than fiction.
Oh,
I don't know why they would.
Truth stranger than fiction.
It can be.
It always, it always is.
Not always.
The second, if you wanted to kill Jack Parsons, wait a day until he's in Mexico. You do it quickly and quietly.
You also could have just shot him in the head.
Yeah, in Mexico.
Yeah, and you definitely, or you could have laced his drugs with shit any of his stuff or anything. Yeah, Charlie Parker could have got in there because he was on so many heroin. You know, you could have told him he was a saxophone. He had
absolutely
no fucking clue.
Hit him with a guitar.
All of this seems much more covert than using a massive explosion on Millionaire's Row in Pasadena that very well could have killed dozens of people had the conditions been just a little different.
That was to send a message.
To send a message.
What?
To who?
Jazz.
About what?
About jazz?
It's about jazz.
But he didn't listen
about
to jazz.
Jazz. To who?
I'm not even going to answer. The audience can't see it, but I'm giving you the hmm.
Yeah, they give me the hmm. You also did, but you didn't explain what the is.
Because the audience can't allegory.
They know.
Discover, decipher.
They can see it.
Yeah. But when it comes to allegations of magical ritual gone wrong, this is more where the human element comes into play. See, some say that Parsons had accidentally summoned a fire demon. But if
because it's all in his writings, right? The Book of Babylon says that, you know, he's going to die in flame. He talked about being blown away. You remember quotation marks, winky wink, right?
It's a fire demon.
If that's true, why
it's
was...
It's not true.
Well, let's entertain the idea
of a fire demon.
Be in the world.
We're going to entertain the idea of a fire demon.
I need you to be a little more mahalo right now.
Yeah, dude. Because you're being very mahal-no.
Okay.
Right,
so a fire demon.
Yeah, but let's say if that's true. Why was
it's not true.
Let's just say, presuppose.
Okay.
Presuppose we're in a world where all of this is real.
Okay.
But if that's true, why was he summoning anything on his way out of town when he had a last-minute explosives over
there? That's the issue.
It's about time management. It's about thinking about.
That's the issue.
It's about, have I packed?
Because he has a vacation.
Yeah.
So why would he summon the fire demon that's totally real if he has a vacation coming up?
See?
Wow, that's presupposed. Wow, yeah.
Because again.
Wow. Yeah, that's not logical at all. Wow. That's fucking brilliant, guys. That is
hours of research.
I know.
I mean it, man. Hours of research. I read 4 books. Yeah. I read 4 books. I even production calls.
I know. It's a lot of research. It's a 4-parter.
Yeah, man. 4-part
series, so. All right, yeah.
Well, to that same point,
right?
Others in the magical community, they said that Parsons was trying to create a
homunculus. Okay. It's real.
Okay.
Do you know what a homunculus is?
I don't know what a homunculus is.
It's a tiny version of yourself.
All right, it's a little, it's you trying to make a Barbie version of yourself.
I'm like so angry. Like, the whole
six hours of show. Yeah. No, it's big.
Okay.
But the thing is, the whole thing was sideways. See, according to the alchemical writings of Paracelsus,
correct,
which were kindly summarized in the Wikipedia entry on homunculi.
Disgusting that you would do that. You would truncate the reading like that.
A homunculus can be made by putrefying one's own semen in a sealed gourd.
Mm, like in that Timothy Shamalama Ding Dong movie.
Yeah, preferably you want to use a cucurbit if you want to do it right. And you're going to keep it for 40 days at the temperature of a horse's womb. Eventually,
which is just a nice. It's like San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's probably 98 to 100.
It's 100. It's 98 to 100 degrees. I looked it up. Yeah, okay. It's about 100 degrees.
A cucurbit is a melon.
Yeah, it's a melon. It's a gourd.
It's a gourd.
It's a gourd.
Okay, so you come inside of a gourd. You put it inside of a horse's womb.
No,
you treat
it
like
at the
it
temperature
was.
Of a horse's womb, and then eventually the cum will come to life, and you feed it for human blood for 40 weeks, always keeping it at the even temperature of a horse's womb. And then, after 40 days, a tiny little version of yourself.
Hey, everybody. Hey, how you doing? You guys like jazz? I don't. I like classical music. I'm a jack.
Remember Lil Penny?
Lil Penny. Oh, yeah, Lil Penny.
It's him.
Yeah,
yeah, it's
the guys.
That's a homunculus created from Penny Hardaway's come.
I had no idea. Yeah.
According to the Secret Rituals of the OTO, which is a book that like breaks down the symbolic meaning of a homunculus, right, is that partially what you're supposed to do, again, spiritual revolution, right?
Okay.
He's not maybe making a direct actual carbon little tiny person version of him, because even though that would be cute,
it would be fun.
It'd be kind of fun. Wouldn't it be kind of fun, right? You're having sex with Carolina.
Yeah.
Right? I'm putting this on your head.
Yeah,
right?
Put it on me. Put
you're
on
having
me.
Sex with Carolina, right? Yeah. But then you have a little tiny you that can jump around. Play with her butthole,
huh?
Like, well, you're with you're in the front, right?
I'm
or
in the
maybe,
front.
Or he's do, or he's working the he's working the
he's
clitoris,
doing whatever he wants to do.
But he's there because he's your husband. He's also her husband.
Yeah, I know, but that he's still going to do what he wants to do.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, because he's you.
Yeah.
Well, how would you feel?
With a tiny little version of myself, I would ask her how she felt about it first.
I forget that she should be included.
I would first have a conversation.
You pull up
about,
little Marcus, be like, Marcusini wants in, right? And be like, I don't know if I want Marcusini in me tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm guessing she's going to say no.
Probably no.
Yeah.
Probably. Little Penny, on the other hand.
According to the secret rituals of the OTO, the ego is not installed into a fetus until it is at 3 months.
Okay.
And so up until 3 months, you can do magical workings and replace the ego of the fetus with anything that you want, anything, any kind of elemental imagery. I don't mean to pain you, but it is that. And then you cycle it out and then you give birth to a child. That's what Aleister Crowley did.
Okay.
Great.
Yeah. Well, I'll go home and I'll ask my wife. I'll ask Carolina.
I would love an update.
I'll ask her about it. Remind me to give you an update next week.
I'll call her tonight.
We'll figure it out.
I'm going to ask her.
Good.
Because I don't want to speak for her. Now, call me crazy.
Okay.
You're crazy.
You did it.
But it seems like the death of Jack Parsons involved just a bit more heat than a horse's womb. And besides, it would have been odd for Parsons to rush his homunculus before going out of town, because it's not like he had a plane to catch. He could just leave the next day. If my homunculus isn't done yet, let's leave on Thursday.
I hate rushing my homunculus.
Absolutely.
I need my time. Yeah. This is my homunculus time.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I don't know. What did he need to rush it for before he went to Mexico? Did they need something fun in the car to play with?
I mean, it would be kind of cute.
Yeah.
Did you play basketball with a football as a child?
Me or Jack Parsons?
You.
No, I play football with a football.
Yeah, he played football. I was
that guy's pretty good. All district.
All right.
Yeah.
Him and Crowley, wide receivers.
More like a tight end.
Yeah, I played safety and running back, my friend.
Oh.
Yeah.
I could actually see you being a great running back.
I was actually very much better running back than I was a safety.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. Well, really, if we're done with that.
We are.
The most likely explanation for Jack's death was put forth by his old friend, Ed Foreman. Mm. And Ben, you might be right in saying that it was a nerd's death. You know why he died?
Why?
Sweaty hands.
Yeah, man. He had clinically sweaty hands. He was like one of those dudes where he had he would probably get a procedure now done to stop his sweaty hands.
If you have that procedure done, you just sweat elsewhere.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's why the sweat still has to go somewhere.
They believe that Bruce Lee died of hydrosis, that he was drinking too much water because he got laser treatment on his armpits because he didn't want people to see pit stains when he was on film because he thought that it looked undignified.
Oh wow, that's horrible.
But it means nothing. I don't know if it's real.
Yeah, I don't know. All right.
Well, usually Jack was meticulous in his work, but in using shitty equipment for a rush job, Jack's hands got slippery. Jack got himself killed.
God dang.
Now, sadly, Ed Foreman was sort of broken by Jack's death. He was reportedly aggressive and withdrawn after his oldest friend was blown to bits. Yeah. And Foreman claimed to have been visited years later by Jack Parsons' spirit during one terrifying night driving alone in the desert.
Hey, you got any gum? Hey, buddy, you got any fuel there, wrong?
Yeah.
Marjorie Cameron, meanwhile, fell apart after Jack's death once the reality of the situation set in. And she lost her grip on reality completely. She burned her possessions and claimed that she was the Scarlet Woman summoned from the Babylon Working. Consequently, she was briefly institutionalized.
Yeah, once you start yelling about being an ancient Sumerian, goddess thing, everyone gets all concerned.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they would just institutionalize a lot of people
back then.
They really would.
Yeah, they really would. But once she gathered herself, just like Jack had done after he crossed the abyss, Cameron returned to California, got more interested in witchcraft and magic, and continued living the groovy life for the next 40 years.
Interesting lady.
Mm-hmm. In addition to becoming a well-respected creator of haunting paintings, Marjorie acted in a number of films directed by well-known Thelemite Kenneth Anger.
There's a view that she gave him. Showed him Thelema.
Yeah, ooh. Showed him Thelema. And remember, Kenneth, that's all wrapped up with Charles Manson.
Oh, yeah.
And Marjorie Cameron once claimed to have participated in a reverse gangbang with Bob Hope after Bob Hope told her about that one time he saw a UFO.
I can't even think of Bob Hope with an erection.
Yeah.
Oh, I can.
Yeah, Bob Hope.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You really think that he worked it?
Oh, yeah. I think so. Bob Hope back in the day, dude?
Yeah. Yeah. That was when he juttered his dog.
Some of those, I remember seeing my grandfather in his underwear, they get old style, boxer short. You know, that was a full pant.
Yeah.
That he wore. Just something about Bob Hope with those around his ankles with his USO hat on and his beard,
So
fluorescent pink.
He had a bunch of chicks gangbang him?
Yeah. Yeah, it was Marjorie and a couple of her friends. They showed up at Bob Hope's house one night. They started talking about UFOs. Before you knew it, everyone's naked, and Bob Hope's got the biggest smile on his face.
That's awesome. That is called the UFO effect.
There. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But no matter what Marjorie Cameron did, the presence of Jack Parsons haunted her, although she did seem to enjoy using Jack as a handy tragedy to hang her hat on.
Well, it made her very mysterious.
Yes. This, of course, led to problems, mostly from jealous lovers. See, much of Jack's writings on magic, including his quote-unquote magical box, they were destroyed in the explosion that killed him.
Oh.
But the surviving documents were entrusted to Marjorie Cameron, who wasn't what you'd call the most responsible archivist.
Mm.
First, a jealous lover destroyed Jack's magical diary because he wanted to replace Jack as Marjorie's magical partner, believing that she'd never get over Jack unless all vestiges of his memory were incinerated.
He's dead. Who cares?
The thing about, if you're trying to have sex with a widow, you gotta act like the husband was cool.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
I mean it.
Course.
If she loved the husband, you're like, oh, man, I wish Steve could see me banging you. You know, yes. Like, I miss
He'd
Steve too. He'd yeah. love this.
Yes, he was a cool guy.
The rest of Jack's magical manuscripts and his occult library, they were entrusted to a public librarian. But since I suppose Marjorie didn't stress the importance of the collection, librarian just threw it all away.
That's on the librarian. They should take everything seriously.
To be honestly, a librarian, that's like kind of like the opposite of what librarians are trained to do.
Yeah. It is the exact opposite. Yeah. They're supposed to archive.
Yeah. But at the same time, Marjorie was also key to our understanding of the Babylon working. She was contacted by Aleister Crowley's archivist, and she was quite open about the ritual. Because, of course, fucking L. Ron Hubbard never talked about it.
No, so, no. L. Ron Hubbard, he stopped it.
Yeah.
He stopped it.
Remember, he stopped it. He was sent there by the Navy
to break up a black magic cult.
Uh-huh.
And
rescue a girl.
Definitely.
That's what the Navy does. I'm pretty sure he knows what the Navy
does. Ask my father.
Uh-huh.
By the 70s, Marjorie Cameron had taken to carrying around a velvet bag that she claimed contained the head of Jack Parsons.
That's cool.
And she was quite charmingly known to say that all Scientologists were bastards.
All right.
And didn't hesitate to say that to the face of every Scientologist she met.
And they went, very good.
Can I jump on your couch?
Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Yeah. Kirstie Alley's dead.
Yeah.
We know.
Yep. We know.
Gal got himself another angel.
Zinu got himself another pilot. But in the end, Cameron seemed to enjoy the mystery of Jack's death just as much as Jack would have enjoyed it.
Hmm.
She always acted as if the official narrative was uncertain and sometimes even suggested that the government had faked Jack's death so they could whisk him away to work on other covert operations.
This is all y'all's job.
Okay.
If I die, is to maintain the mystery of my death. It's the idea of it. Mm-hmm. It's that hopefully if it all works out, if it goes according to plan,
right,
it's going to be big.
It's gonna be big. Yeah, you often say you're not gonna have a head.
Yeah. It's gonna be big.
Yeah. Okay.
And so just know that we were like, oh yeah, you know, I don't know what I heard Henry was channeling the panty crisis. That's what it was.
Brilliant. I don't think Jack Parsons wasn't like muddling guacamole. He wasn't like making salsa.
Yeah.
I might die a salsa related death. I don't know. But keep it mysterious.
Sadly though, Marjorie Cameron died in 1995 of a brain tumor. And reportedly her last words were just as amusing as her life. She said, quote,
"The dog's dying, the car's dying, I'm dying, we're all dying."
I like her.
I like her, yeah. And again, she went as Cameron by then. Now she's Cameron.
Yeah, Cameron. She hated the name Marjorie, because remember, that was the name of the aunt that haunted her when she was a child.
Mm.
Yeah. Went by Candy sometimes.
Okay. I love a good Candy. Absolutely.
Candy Cameron. Huh.
Candy Cameron.
It's cute.
Candace Cameron.
Indeed.
Murphy Brown. That's the formula. Murphy Brown incantation formula.
Did you know that Murphy Brown hated her father because he was a ventriloquist and she always felt that he loved the doll more than he loved her?
We put more money. I can't believe how much. There was literally several million dollars were spent to bring Murphy Brown back.
Yeah.
Really?
And it did nothing. And it's garbage. I can't believe
when
it.
When did that happen?
Exactly. Yeah. But no, she hated the ventriloquist. She always thought the ventriloquist that she was competing with the ventriloquist as an actual sibling.
Wow. I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it works.
Sure.
Well, as far as the legacy of Jack Parsons goes, people are somewhat split on how important his contributions were to the history of 20th century science. The more button-up types say that his role is exaggerated, but that's only because Parsons didn't publish papers. Mm. And he was, again, just a little too groovy for the scientific establishment.
Yeah, a little odd.
Well, they didn't like that he didn't have degrees and he wasn't passed. That's the whole thing. He wasn't passed by the inside group.
Yeah.
He didn't do it the right way.
He didn't do it the right way. Yeah. And, you know, he just didn't, he didn't pay the money.
Yeah. From what more open-minded historians say, Parsons was a key figure in the road towards space travel and exploration, and the company he helped found was responsible for flawlessly landing the Mars Curiosity rover amongst many, many other accomplishments. But the more interesting question here is whether or not his magical work had any bearing on the world we live in today.
Aliens!
Aliens?
Yes. He made aliens.
Well, some say that the Babylon working ripped a hole in reality.
Aliens!
Because the bear, goddammit, quit interrupting me by yelling aliens.
Aliens?
He did it.
Because the very same year that Parsons claimed to have finished the ritual, the Babylon working ritual, the Roswell incident occurred.
Mm.
And UFO sightings have not slowed down since.
Coincidence?
Well, not one.
No.
Well, Aleister Crowley also claimed that World War One began because he fucked up a ritual.
Who knows? Because, I mean, but again, that's magic history.
Yeah.
And it's the idea that he fucked something up. He did bring in the Aeon of Babylon, and we're seeing it unfold. And a part of that is replacing the old gods with new ones. Instead of seeing elementals like fairies and aliens, and like, instead of like that, we're now seeing our new technological gods.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it OCD?
Isn't what OCD?
What Aleister Crowley thinks.
Oh, maybe he might.
Because he thinks that he brought, I mean, World War One was going to happen if he got butt fucked or not.
Yeah, but he liked the, he was bragging.
Yeah, he was like, responsible. I did so hard. Yeah. I caused World War One.
Yes. Yeah.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, but a coincidence does have to be taken into account.
Coincidence. Mm-hmm.
But it must be said that Jack Parsons' life was almost defined by the phenomenon of mysterious coincidence.
That's true.
No matter what, though, Jack Parsons is certainly an American character worth remembering and worth admiring. He was a free spirit and an independent thinker in an age when either of those things could land you in jail if you weren't careful. Mm. So while the Babylon working may not have been successful in the way Parsons wanted, his influence still matters. That is to say, Babylon or no, Jack Parsons still helped change our reality.
He did. Wow. I really do believe it. I think that he was interesting. And what he did was that he brought, if there was one thing he did, he was the figure of ritual magic for our age.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he brought it, like, which is why we bring him into this fourth series that sort of, like, rounds out this section of, like, quote-unquote modern ritual magic.
Yeah.
Where he brought it to a new height again. He kind of, quote-unquote, made it cool because he brought into all these counterculture movements. I think there was something to it. Maybe Babylon working is why we got rock and roll.
Maybe.
Maybe it's not. I don't know. But I do have a really, I like this reading. I want to do a little reading.
Okay.
That's from Freedom is a Two-Edged Sword. And I think it really describes Parsons. Our significance does not lie in the extent to which we resemble others, or in the extent to which we differ from them. It lies within our ability to be ourselves. And this may well be the entire object of life, to discover ourselves, our meaning. But this cannot be some sudden burst of illumination. It is a constant process, which continues so long as we are truly alive. This process cannot continue unobstructed unless we are free to undergo all experience and willing to participate in all of existence. Then the significant questions are not, is it right or is it good, but rather, how does it feel and what does it mean?
The McRib is also bad.
God damn it.
And I
you had a perfect opportunity to do Mahalo.
Absolutely.
That was a perfect opportunity for you to do what you started doing.
Jazz, baby. It's the words you don't say. I earbudded it. I ear planted it. And now people say it. Now, Mahalo. People are like, Mahalo.
Now you just did ritual magic.
All that's right. Long.
It's technically also PR.
Absolutely. Well, all right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week, obviously, unless we're dead because we're going to get into explosives.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, we're supposed to get into rockets now that we're in LA together.
Yeah, we have been talking about getting into rockets. Little rockets.
Yeah, little rockets.
Like the little rockets that you paint and you put the little cartridges in, you blast them off. I used to do it when I was a kid. I blew a bunch of shit up, set it on fire all the time.
Oh, yeah, dude. It's awesome.
You can get into, what was it? Is it Love Liza? He gets into RC racing?
Yeah, RC cars. Yeah.
RC cars. I'm not going to.
I'm not going to live an Love Liza life.
Yeah, what's Love Liza?
Have you ever seen
that one with Philip Seymour Hoffman where he's huffing the gas?
It's one of the most
that's what you wanted to be?
It's one of the most depressing yet also heartwarming movies I've ever seen.
It's funny and it ends with an explosion.
It's funny, yeah.
Wow, it does.
Yeah.
All right, everyone.
I just can't wait. I can close some tabs.
I'm very happy that you can. Thank you so much for listening. Do we have any other things to discuss?
We have announced our new, because we are bumping up, because obviously Marcus is still getting over long COVID. He's doing great on ZZ. But it's still a process. So we are postponing our Australian tour to August, and those dates are now put out there, but we're coming. We can't wait.
Thank you to all my Australian friends for being understanding about the postponement. It's just we didn't want to run into another situation where I get on the other side of the world and forget how to breathe again.
Yes. I was watching an Australian comedian, and they had the audience was in masks, but they had a really weird smile on the mask.
Yeah, that's scary.
It was really trippy.
That really, really scares me.
It was scary. I'll show you a picture after.
Yeah, I don't like fake smiles.
No, it was weird.
So do yourself a favor. I really feel like if you're interested in more of this stuff, like read Jack Parsons' writings to kind of see how a wizard thinks.
Yeah.
It's, you know, some of it's more impressive than others.
Yeah.
But freedom is a two-edged sword. It's beautiful.
It's nice. And, you know, just to bring a little bit of capitalism into this communism conversation, that's terrifying. Ben just showed me the picture. It's absolutely terrifying.
Oh, wow. Oh, she likes it.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
If you're looking for a Christmas gift for one of your loved ones, go to lastpodcastmerch.com.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we got an ornament.
Yeah, we got an ornament. Get yourself a three-headed doll.
It's cute.
Yeah.
It is cute.
They did a good job.
Or buy the book. Or buy the Trade of Soul Plumber, which came out a couple of months ago. It's on sale.
That's a great idea. Yeah. Also, we are going to, we're going to be making an announcement about another project pretty soon. I don't know when that is. So.
Very cool shit.
All right, everyone. Thank you for listening. Hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Hail King.
Congratulations, everybody.
Hail me. Because there's only one me, and it's gotta be me.
Oh, shit. Got one more thing.
Okay.
The new No Dogs in Space series has started.
We have Patti Smith.
Patti Smith Part 1 and Part 2 are currently out. It's a three-part series. If you want to wait for the whole thing to be out, the third part will be out next week. But yeah, Part 1 and 2 are out. We're very proud of this one. So go on and check out Patti Smith if you're interested in one of the godmothers of punk.
She's like a lot more rockin' than I thought she was.
So much more.
She's great. Bye! See you in hell!
There you go. Now you got it.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.